It's been wonderful, hasn't it, to have all this rain? And so we pray for the safety for those who are affected by it, where it's just can't absorb. But we know how the hallelujah of the earth right now to receive this blessing of rain and all of us. So tomorrow, more to celebrate, Martin Luther King Jr.'s day of recognition, and a reminder of just that beautiful soul and all that he brought that stays with us, unconditional love, the fight for freedom and justice and equality, and so much of what our principles really are all about. Despite the inhumanity and the cruelty that he witnessed and experienced firsthand, he continued to believe. He continued to keep his eyes on the idea and his heart and soul in the space that says humanity is great. It has a great potential, all of humanity, all human beings. And he said specifically this: there is within human nature an amazing potential for goodness. Yeah, that's it right there. That's our second principle. So as we speak about our five principles, if you're new here, you might notice that we have these beautiful paintings on the wall done by one of our members, and that's each of the five principles. So today we're on number two, I am divine. And specifically how we speak of this principle is something like this. It's said in different versions, but it basically boils down to this. Human beings are divine in nature and therefore inherently good. So it's all about then the journey, the spiritual path is all about the find, right? It's like, where is that divinity and how do I connect with it and how do I bring it forth and feel it and know it and place my faith in it and then live from it, which is really principle number five, which we'll get to. All of these principles are being woven together with number five, which is how does it come alive? How do I live it? How do I embody it? How do I be this truth in the world? So first, we must find it. We must locate it, right? There's a Hindu legend about this very thing of where to find our divinity. And sometimes it does feel like it's maybe hidden from us. So in this legend, the humans at one time on Earth were gods, and they were abusing their power. They were abusing their divine power. And so Brahma, the chief god, called together the council of the gods and said, "We've got a problem." And all the council of the gods said, "Don't we ever." And so what are we going to do, Brahma? And Brahma says, "We need to hide humans' divinity from them." And so what are we going to do, folks? Any ideas? Let's bring the ideas forward. And somebody, one of the gods shoots up their hand. They said, "I know what we'll do. We're going to bury it really down deep in the earth." And everybody's nodding and thinking, "Oh, that's a really good idea." And Brahma goes, "No, I think humans will dig down deep in the earth. They're going to find it in the earth." So another one shoots up their hand and says, I know. "We're going to put it really, really down deep into the ocean, so deep in the ocean bed, they'll never know how to look for it there. It's going to hurt their ears when they get in the water." And Brahma said, "No, you know, humans are going to learn to dive deep into the ocean bed. I don't think that's going to work." So a third one, you know, always these stories, there's three, right? So a third one shoots up their hand and says, "Okay, I've got it. Let's put it high on the mountaintops. They will never reach those high peaks." Brahma immediately. Humans are going to climb eventually all of the mountains, and they're going to find it. So everybody's out of ideas. They're like, "Oh, well, I don't know what else to do. Let's all pray about it." So there's a moment of prayer, and then Brahma says, "Look, this is what we're going to do. This is the place where the humans will never, ever think to look." I bet you could guess where. Inside of them, of course. And ever since then, we've been climbing mountains and diving in the sea and digging in the earth looking for God, right? And here is the divine within us. A few of us have really found it and live in that space. A few of us or some of us are getting glimpses of it every so often, a feeling of it, a memory of it, a sense of it, an experience of it, and wishing for more of that. Some of us are on the path and we're really serious and we're seeking because we know that gold is in there, and we just keep digging in for it to find it and to live from it and with pure determination. And some of us don't even believe there's any way us human beings could ever have divinity within us. And they say, look at the world, come on, there's no way, right? Well, way back when, Cynthia Bourgeau in The Wisdom Way talks about, Wisdom Way of Knowing is her book. She lays out the origins of the Christian church and how this whole experience of these two ideas of divine within and divine without, it came to be. So it was in the late 400s that there was an argument between two religious leaders. Pelagius was the leader of the Celtic Church. And Pelagius said that he believed the purpose of our earthly lives was to realize the divine image and likeness within human beings. Going back to Genesis, when the very beginning of Genesis, it says that we were made in the image and likeness of God. So that's where Pelagius' argument stood. Augustine was a bishop of the Roman Catholic Church, and Augustine could not conceive of such an outlandish idea about human beings. In fact, he said this specifically, "Perfection is impossible for human beings. Human nature itself is irreparably corrupt, and salvation is possible only through an extraordinary infusion of grace mediated through Jesus and specifically within the church." And Augustine won the argument. And so that is how original sin became a major tenet of the Christian church. But what about Pelagius and all the other folks who didn't really buy the idea that humanity was inherently bad and inherently sinful, born in original sin, but maybe actually born in original blessing or original virtue? What about us, the others that believe differently? What did Jesus' early followers believe? What did Jesus believe? What did he say? Jesus said, "Did I not say ye are gods?" Jesus was performing miracles and everybody was putting him on a pedestal, and he said, "These things I do and greater things will you do." He said that you are the light of the world. The Gnostic Gospels were found in Egypt in 1945. And these were near sacred burial grounds. And some scholars think that these texts reveal the teachings that were given in secret to the disciples. That was actually a common thing at the time, that rabbis, the Gospel of Mark even says it, that rabbis of that day would often have simpler teachings that they told the whole public, and often Jesus would teach those in parables, like to relate to the farmer or the merchant or whatever it may be. But closer in, the followers that were closer in got a different depth of teaching. And so in the Nag Hammadi find and in these Gnostic Gospels, there are these teachings that seem to be more like that. In the Gospel of Thomas, sometimes called the secret sayings of Jesus, are revealed. Here's number 70. It says, "If you bring forth what is within you will save you." And number 3 is kind of similar. "When you come to know yourselves, you will realize it is you who are the sons of the living Father," or the children of the One, you could say. "But if you will not know yourselves, you dwell in poverty, and it is you who are that poverty." So there's these are really powerful teachings. You can see why these were not like the widely publicized teachings, right? When we're first being introduced to the idea, it's like I always think about my friend Mary, who early, long, long time ago, we met in my office when she was new to Unity, and we were talking about inherent goodness, and she's like, "Oh, no, cannot go there." So the best affirmation we could come up with for her to take away was, "I'm okay." you know, we start where we start, right? We start where we start, and then we move forward on our journey, and we unveil more and more and more of the truth that is within us. And then we know it more and more, and we can stand in it more and more. So he does. So in this, what's really clear in these sayings from the Gospel of Thomas is that Jesus is not saying, I'm the only Son of God. He's saying that we are all the offspring of this living God, of this essence. And he says, if we don't come to know ourselves, if we don't get serious about knowing this truth of who we are, we'll dwell in poverty. Well, what does that mean? It's very much like what we often talk about, a mentality of lack and limitation, right? A consciousness that says, I'm not enough. There's not enough. I'm not worthy. And so it's from that we go and we can spring forth into the other side of that, which says, I am dwelling in a place of prosperity. And in the prosperity is the journey to joy and fulfillment and possibility and co-creation and all that we can make possible upon the earth that we dream about, that we vision. So it pulls us forward into that vision to be that when we shift into this knowing, this truth, that there is inherent goodness in me, inherent greatness, a potential in me that I can tap, that I can come into contact with, and it becomes not so much just a potential anymore, but it becomes who I am, how I show up, how I live and breathe and move about my day. So there is no standard, there is no savior, no stand-in, no savior according to this. It's just up to us, right? It's in us and it's up to us. Now that can feel a little daunting. Anybody feel a little daunted by that sometimes? I don't even know if daunted is a word, but it sounds like a word. So I'm going to go with it. So this is where principle number one becomes our comfort, our recognition that there, yes, it is in me, and yes, it is up to me, and it's not just me. There is an allness that permeates the universe. There is an energy that permeates the universe that is a divine intelligence. There is divine ideas available to me that don't have to come just from within me, but might get prompted from that greater energy. And so it's that kind of thing that we can kind of lean back and realize, ah, there's help, there's encouragement, there's support, there's something for me to work with that is, it's in me and it's bigger than me. And so that those two working together is really where we can kind of bring forth the power, the magnificence, the potentiality, the possibility, and make it real. So Unity's fifth principle is all about how do we live the other ones? How do we practice these things? How do we make them come alive and live into that truth? And so I want to jump to number five and apply it to number two to say, how do we be this innate divinity? How do we live this innate divinity? There are lots of different ways to do it, but I want to hone in three ways that we can really bring forth our divinity. The first is to behold the divine in all. The divine in all life, the divine, and that includes ourselves, the divine in each other, because I specifically put it there because a lot of times we forget, right? We forget about how it needs to start with us and a recognition of ourselves, and especially for the second one, to love unconditionally. To love unconditionally not only all beings and other humans, but also to love ourselves unconditionally. And then finally, to serve this truth, to serve life itself by sharing ourselves, by sharing our gifts, by sharing our truth, by sharing our faith. So all of that can be encompassed in the beholding and the loving and the serving. Let's take them one by one for a minute. So beholding the divine, seeing the divine in ourselves and in each other, seeing it as a reflection of the truth of who we are, and then recognizing that our relationships are mirrors of that divinity when we move about the world. Seeing past the imposters, right? The imposters are the ways that we behave or believe ourselves to be, and other people get kind of themselves off off their divine alignment by believing themselves to be something other than this truth of who they are. Right? It's when we go into the ideas that I'm not enough, or I can only, or that we kind of show up in those smaller ways. These are some of the, and imposters can also be the ways that we have taken on, you know, sometimes we'll say, I'm living somebody else's life, like, right? I'm living my mother's life or my father's life, or, you know, that we're living out of a pleasing kind of mentality rather even than a sense of what is mine? What are the gifts and the soul expression that are mine to give that only I can do the way that I can do? So it's also about our authentic expression. Is a part of all of this, right? Of how we show up. And so we're all divine, no matter how much we've strayed from it. And the work of beholding the divinity is being able to see it, even in those moments when somebody's not really showing up at their best, including ourselves, right? And to recognize, not go down this idea of naming that person like Augustine did as innately corrupt. Right? Well, everybody is divine except, and then you've got your short list, right? I hope that's the short list and not the other way around, right? Or you have the everybody but one, right? I can't tell you how many Unity Basics classes we've talked about Adolf Hitler and how it is that he could have divinity. So that's another topic for a class because it's a deeper conversation. But it is that knowing, right, that recognition that there is a spark of divinity in all and that we can choose to live in a way that we don't believe that. We can choose to live in a way that we believe that we are innately sinful and we're innately corrupt and so we're going to control and dominate and annihilate one another, right? That is a place that we can choose to be, but it's not where we're choosing to be. So this idea of that the Christ is among us really helps us begin to move toward this. There was an old monastery, a stone monastery out in the woods off the main road that people used to go to all the time. They would go way off the highway just to get to this monastery because the feeling there was so good. The gardens were beautiful. A lot of people would bring picnic lunches, and sometimes they'd stay to hear the monks chant the Vespers or hear their prayers. And it just was a really beautiful experience and a stirring of that divine feeling. But the place had kind of gone into disrepair, and it kind of had a sort of flat, gray energy about it now. It just wasn't the same place, and people didn't show up anymore. The head abbot was really worried about this, and so he went to the hermit in the woods, Jeremiah, and he went to have a conversation with him, and he told him about what he was noticing, and even noticing the monks themselves kind of not really being kind to each other and kind of getting snippy with each other and angry, a lot of infighting. And Jeremiah said, I had a vision that I think might help you. And the abbot was all ears. And he said, the Christ is among you. And the abbot was flabbergasted. How could it be? He was so excited, though, too, with the possibility, because Jeremiah's visions were always like spot on. So he nearly ran back to the monastery with excitement to tell the other monks, but on the way he was thinking about it. Could it be Jonas? Jonas is so frosty with anger. I don't think it could be Jonas. Could it be Pierre? Oh, Pierre, he's so defensive. You know, and so he just went through all the monks one by one, and he was pretty sure it couldn't be any of them. And then he thought, oh, he stopped himself in his tracks. Could it be me? Oh, and then he laughed as hard as he could laugh, you know, just side-splitting laughter at the thought that it could be him, and was pretty sure that wasn't true. So he wasn't sure what, but he was excited to tell the other monks. So when he got back and he tells the monks, they all have the same reaction. Jaws drop, eyes get big, and then they begin to have the same thoughts, looking around. No, could it be Joseph? Joseph is so quiet. Maybe it's Joseph. And so maybe I better be a little kinder to Joseph. And so this process began of seeing the Christ within each other. And you can know what happens as we see the Christ in one another, we begin to behave a little bit differently, right? If Jesus or your favorite master teacher, Buddha, or someone else showed up, how would you treat them? What if they walked in the door right now? Wouldn't we all just be aghast? Wouldn't we all just want to fall over ourselves to see if Jesus or Buddha needed anything, if we could make them comfortable, if we could sit at their feet, if we if we could bow down a few more times, right? If we could call all of our friends, hurry up and get to unity, Jesus is there. And he's going to give a talk. What? You know, can you imagine? Can you imagine what would happen? The throngs would be pressing in. We'd have to, you know, just, you can, yeah, I'm going off on now. Crazy imagination of this. Sounds pretty exciting. So that's it, right? That is it. If we can carry that knowing, if we truly believe this, that the divine is in us and it's in all life, then how does that show up? It shows up like that. It shows up like that. Oh my gosh. I am so glad you're here. What can I do to serve you? What can I do to help you? And then there's that kind of constant movement toward unconditional love. Loving and honoring and respecting one another and ourselves, because we have seen past the stuff that gets in the way, the human ideas of limitation, the things that we label as foibles or faults, and we can see that truth and pull forth that truth, and then we begin to treat each other that way. It doesn't have to be in this order. It can go either way. But the treating is like the golden rule that's found in all religions across the world, right? To treat others as you wish to be treated, with love, with kindness, with respect, with honor, with all of those things. A few days ago, I was walking out in the rain. Well, not so much in the rain. I was more in it was raining, but I was in like a little shopping area with an awning, and I had just come out of a coffee shop, and it was kind of chilly, and I was really enjoying my warm beverage. Anybody finding yourself drinking more coffee and tea these days? Yeah, me too. It's like I constantly want something warm. And so I was approaching this man, and he had dirty clothes, and his face was dirty, and he was sitting on the pavement, and we just connected. I, you know, just looked at each other, and just there was just this warm, warm smile exchange. And I got a couple feet past him, and I thought, wow, I bet he'd really like a warm beverage too. And so I circled back around, went and got him a gift card because I didn't know what he'd want, and just received it with the same kind of warmth. You know, it wasn't a big to-do. But what I noticed was what happened inside of me, because this is what service is all about, right? What I noticed was the process that happened inside of me. And I did not see our difference. I mean, I saw that our circumstances were most likely different. I would assume our circumstances were different. But that's the only difference. And it immediately shifted into a connection and a oneness. That it was just, I was having this pleasure of this warm beverage on a cold, rainy day, and I saw somebody who I thought, oh, I'd like to share this with somebody, and I bet he would really enjoy this. So it was just that kind of simple experience that lifted me up, that let me feel that sense of what it feels like to honor each other, to connect with each other, to see our oneness, to come from a place of dignity and respect and kindness and simple pleasures. Living from our divinity prompts us to serve. It's not out of any kind of duty or do-gooderness. It doesn't even come into... I just keep making up words. Do-gooderness, yeah. Keeps your attention. If I just like throw in a new word, you go, wait, is that a word? So whatever it is, you know, it's not out of that kind of energy. It's just a natural thing. It's as natural as anything else we would ever want to do. And it helps us abandon a little bit of I'm on my agenda kind of way of being to just being open to what comes and what marvelous opportunities might be in our path today to behold the divinity, to love unconditionally, and to serve life itself or someone specifically. Dr. King said, everyone has the power for greatness, not fame, but greatness. And he said, because greatness is determined by service. And he didn't spell it out even further, but I'll spell it out even further, because we all can serve in whatever ways we serve. You know, it doesn't, it's don't just compare yourself all the time, because of course that's the thief of joy anyway. If we just compare ourselves to these greats like Martin Luther King and say, oh well, but to really serve, you got to be brave, you got to start a civil rights movement, you got to put your life on the line, you know, maybe you could just offer somebody a cup of coffee and a smile. You know, it doesn't have to always be that big, and maybe it will be that big and brave and bold for you. I hope it will be, but it's also these simple things that are a part of everyday life that allows us to do exactly these things, to love more freely, to, you know, serve perhaps even more boldly, and to look more deeply at the divinity that is within all. I am divine. If we hold that affirmation, if we speak that affirmation, we begin to let that truth really seep in. I am divine. I am divine. The I am that is in all life is divine. And then we can live from there. So let's affirm together what we can do to really make this principle come alive for us. Together, human beings are divine. I look more deeply, love more freely, and serve more boldly. And so it is.